It's good to see everybody. Enjoy your lunch. Enjoy some words of Torah as we go along. The topic is superstitions and segulos. And I just told you, I was recently in Eretz Yisrael. I was in August, and I spent one day going on a tour of the North. It's a 12-hour tour. It's like a marathon thing, and they take you to a lot of different kfarim and Mekomos Kedoshim up in the North. So we got to a place called Amuka. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Amuka, it's the kever of Yonatan ben Uziel. And it's well known as a segula that a person who's looking for a shidduch would go there. And it happens they have a good reputation of being relatively being successful. So the fellow, when we pulled up at each place, we got to Tzvai, went to Tveria, finally we got to Meiron, and near Amuka's not so far from there. So he says 20 minutes, because he's keeping to a schedule. So someone said, we've been waiting all day for this, and really we'd like to spend more time. This is very important. We've come all the way here. The Amuka, we want to be mispallel here. He says, I think 20 minutes would be enough. We have to keep the schedule. Some people here are already married, so, He said, plus, I want to warn you. He said, one time a fellow asked, and he's davin, and we waited, and finally, an hour and 10 minutes, okay, people had Rahmanis talk, and we waited for the fellow. And he had tremendous atzlacha. He was married 3 times in the next 5 years. So be careful sometimes with these segulas. Sometimes they could go too far. Be careful with them. Sometimes I want to call them magical, but maybe we'll come across some, of course, in a perspective how to deal with them. Now, the reason I chose the topic is, first of all, everyone knows Parashat HaShavua, that Eliezer, or in Chazal, in the Pesukim, it doesn't say anywhere Eliezer, it says he's Eved Avraham, but the Gemara identifies him as Eliezer Eved Avraham. Rashi says that, and the Gemara calls him that, but the Pesukim is Eved Avraham. And when he went to look for a wife, for Rivka, so he had instructions to look for someone who would be appropriate from his family. He knew he had to be from Avraham's family. So he got to the well, and he had no idea how to go about his business. He said, who am I going to go to? So he says, before he even starts, he says, I'm going to set up a sign, and that is the following, that whoever I approach, I'm going to approach a young lady, and if she is, I'm going to ask her for water. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask her for water. And if she answers and says back to me, I'll give you water, that's pretty nice already. It's a hard work to get the water out of the well. And then, but she's not only, I'll give you water, but I'll give water for your camels also. Even though it's not going to, I won't ask for that, but if she offers for me and for my camels, that's the one who will be the wife for Yitzhak. And that's how we set it up. Now the Gemara criticizes Eliezer and says he's among the few times in history which the Gemara identifies Shalu Shalo Kahogan. He presented himself in a situation which is totally inappropriate. And fortunate for him, he was answered properly, though. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did help him out. So that's one reason why I chose the topic for today. We have to understand, what did Eliezer do? Why is the Gemara call this inappropriate? Why was it successful nonetheless? What did he have in mind? What was his idea? Now, I want to... the second reason I chose this topic is because in the air... Right now, we're hovering in the community or throughout society, is a lot of hooligans are walking up and down the blocks, and there are people dressed up as goblins and ghosts, because this coming Sunday is the Goyisha holiday, commercial holiday of Halloween. And there are a lot of superstitions, and some people feel maybe a segula is a magical thing, and you set it up, and if I do this, then this is going to happen. If I wear a red string around my wrist, then I should expect value, even though there's not necessarily association or connection between the cause and effect. So perhaps it could be a superstitious type of thing, and I feel that Halloween, now I actually is along those lines of a superstitious time. I actually went online. I Googled this on superstitions and origins. It's hard to find one that had anything worthwhile to read. I spent too much time on this, but I did find one site that has some information. He has about, I'd say, at least 15 superstitions. Most of them I actually heard of. Some I never heard of before, and it's all right. But the first one is a trick or treat on Halloween. And I'm going to share with you the origin. Now, this is not going to surprise anybody here. I'm sure we all wonder what the, if there's anything legitimate about this. I think, by the way, this author, it seems to me, I was reading through this, he seems to start out being very academic about it. He seems to be wanting to know legitimately, you know, what's the background and the history behind these things. It doesn't take him half a page before he becomes very, very sarcastic, and he starts lacing into these things right and left. I don't know what his attitude when it started. It sounded to me like he was a little bit objective. As soon as he got to one or two of these superstitions, he immediately throws these to the wind and criticizes them right and left as being ridiculous. So let's share this one. So this is a trick or treat. The tradition can be traced back 2,000 years or much longer to a Celtic belief that the spirits of the dead still remain present on our plane of existence, and they need food and drink to be placated. Now, if you don't leave out an offering, then these disgruntled spirits would cause mischief and ill fortune and retaliation. So this predates any distortion of a religious belief. It's really a pagan understanding and belief. And now it got carried on in different forms and distorted in different ways. People started dressing up as the spirits, and they started begging for food. And then if people didn't give them food, then they would play a trick. But the trick wasn't necessarily a card trick. It was actually, you know, they were going to be damaging, or they're going to be they'd come and hurt people. So they'd say, unless you help us, we're going to hurt you. So people were actually intimidated, and they had to give the food. Practical jokes are worse. So this is touching upon, I don't think anybody here is surprised, it touches upon pagan beliefs and pagan practices. Now today, it doesn't have any, I don't think you ask anybody, they would associate with that. I had a student in my class, this is serious, I had a student in my class last week, he said, Rabbi, what if we just go around asking for the candy? He said, what if I don't even get dressed up? You know, sometimes my parents, you know, they let us go around and we just collect candy. We got a piece of kosher. So he said, what's wrong? I don't know. Pagans, Megan, I don't know. I'm not doing it for any Avodah Zarah. Is that all right? Okay, that's a good question. There's actually a very good answer to that. The answer is, knowing, not knowing something doesn't mean that we're, you know, we're ignorant of something. It doesn't mean it doesn't have these meanings to it. And it's something which you want to stay away from, at least. Now, I did tell him the following. I say, I'll give you a bracha before I give you an answer. I say, you know, I have some grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, in Eretz Yisrael, and they're not asking their parents this question. Can I go trick-or-treating? It's okay. The candy. Because Baruch Hashem, you know, there are communities which the kids don't know from this. And I gave them a bracha. I said, your children won't ask their Rebbe that question because perhaps they'll be in an environment where they'll be so busy in other things, maybe the environment and the Kedusha, and it won't be saturated with the point where they'll be focused on other things and you won't be distracted by the culture or the secular culture or the pagan remnants that exist. Now, let's immediately go to the sources here, just briefly. There are at least three psukim in the Torah that deal with superstitions. I'll read you one. It says, here is the Parashat Kedoshim. Lo sochlu al adam, lo sanachashu, don't indulge in sorcery, velo onenu, and don't believe in lucky times. That's one. There's two other psukim, and I'm immediately going to go right to the Gemara on this one. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, it's on Samech Hei. Tanu Rabbanan, the Braisa says, Menachesh. What is this Menachesh? Was this sorcery? If someone says, well, I was eating and my bread fell out near my mouth, or my stick fell down, or he hears voices from his son called at a certain time, he hears a bird chirping and it means something, or a deer crosses his path. We're more familiar with maybe a black cat. Or there's a, let's say, a deer on the right side, or there's a fox crossing on the left side. These obviously were the contemporary superstitions at the time of the Mishnah. Don't ask me first thing in the morning for tzedakah or for a business thing. Because the first thing in the morning, it's not good luck to get started on the first thing. I have to do things first and then anything. So certain times are not auspicious. Rosh Chodesh is not acceptable for me. Or Motzei Shabbos is bad luck for me. These are all identified as Tnachashu and Losa Onenu, referring to times and things and objects, and they are an Easter Doraisa. The person actually conducts himself based upon subjecting himself to these superstitious activities, and he allows himself to be affected by the dead with the Easter Doraisa. The Rambam said a person would even be subject to lashes. He would get Malchus in the basin. They would actually be punishable. And I'll read you the Rambam right away. Ein Menachashim Kagoyim. The Rambam Hilchos Avodah Zarah, of all places, when it talks about idolatry, this really brings the halacha that it's prohibited to buy into sorcery and magic and superstitions. Now he adds in one word, Eim Menachashim Kagoyim. We can't be like the Gentiles. That's an interesting word, and we'll get back to that. So, right away we notice superstitions are many times very suspect in their origins, and it's almost shocking to see how it's either pagan, some of these things, I didn't go to the other ones with you, but some of them actually do come from Christianity and from other religions, and actually distortions of them. A lot of the things on Christmas, you'd be shocked to hear that what they do, it's obviously just commercial and mindless. They're not thinking about the significance. If they would find out what it is, they would, I don't know what they would do. I guess the commercial industry wouldn't let them change Santa Claus or the Christmas tree either, because they're making too much money on it. But they actually, I don't think they're all necessarily religious objects. I want to, so one clear extreme is superstition. Now, we did mention earlier that there are segulos. I want to tell you a couple stories about the Gemara, and we have to resolve this. We'll come up with a couple ideas. There's a Gemara in Kulin. It tells us about Eliezer. And there's one other case also. Now, first I'll tell you, the background is a story of this fellow named Rav. Rav was one of the most important Amorim. He was a first generation Amora. And he wanted to visit his son-in-law. And his son-in-law lived across the river. So whenever he had to go, he had to take the ferry boat. So the Gemara says, one day he wanted to go visit his son-in-law. I guess his daughter also. So he got to the port, or to the boat, and it was waiting there for him. Right when he got there, it was waiting. He was able to get right on, and it was ready to go. I guess the boat didn't go there often. It wasn't so easy. You lose time. That particular day, it was right there. He said, oh, this indicates I'm going to have a great day. That's what Rob said. He said, because I'm going to have a great day. So he got on the boat. He went to his son-in-law. And when he got there, everybody came out to greet him. They saw he was coming, and he was a great man. The Rav has an opinion, this is brought down the halacha, that anytime meat is no longer in direct contact, it's not kosher anymore. If you don't see meat, at any point you lose track of its positioning. I mean, you can wrap it up in a double wrap. That's why when we buy the jewel, it's double wrapped. It says don't break the sign or it's not kosher anymore. That's really true. If those wraps, because it has to be secured. That is it's a fulfillment of Rav's halakha that it has to be secured all the way through the line, and we can't lose track of it. I heard a story, I'm sure maybe it's a famous story. One fellow was on an airplane one time, and he had his sandwich, and he was going to get up to go wash. So he left the sandwich there, and the guy looking at it, okay, he wanted to go wash, and came back to his seat, and he was going to have a sandwich. Suddenly he realized that he didn't pay attention for those 2 minutes. He had gone to the back of the plane, he wasn't washing his meat. He didn't wrap it up, he had left it on his tray. So what could happen already? So he said, I'm not eating this. So the guy said, there's a Gentile sitting next to him. He said, why don't you eat it? I'm eating my lunch, you eat your lunch. What's your problem? He said, no, I'm not eating this. He says, it looks like you're pretty hungry to me. You asked me to get up. You want to go, prepare yourself. So I feel uncomfortable. I'm eating my sandwich. It's a complete stranger. And he's saying, I don't feel comfortable eating and you're not eating. He says, no, I can't eat it. What's your problem? He says, well, I just remembered there's this law that if you lose track of the meat for a second, it's not good. So the guy's jaw dropped. And he says, I'm astounded. He says, you won't believe this. He said, they gave us a ham sandwich. And I always wondered what kosher meat tasted like. So it looks like a slice of deli, the same thing. So you know what? I'm sorry to tell you this. I'm sorry, but I switched it for one. What does it make? A piece of ham, piece of salami. I actually took your piece of salami and I gave you my piece of ham. And I'm astounded that your law actually anticipated such a thing. So Rav is the one who suggested this. And this brought down the halacha. This halacha, that meat ever eludes your sight, it's not kosher. When Rav went to his son-in-law, they were preparing meat. So when they came out to greet him, not only did his son-in-law and the family come, but the cooks also, everybody left the house and left it empty as they're surrounding him and greeting him. This is a Gemara Kulin on Sadi Hei Amud Beis, 95b. Everybody's happy, and Rav's giving this serious look. So what's the problem? So Rav said, if I didn't keep my eye on the house the whole time, we'd have lost our whole banquet. We wouldn't have eaten it. But luckily, I was watching, and even though the house emptied out, I kept my eye on it. So he said, nevertheless, Rav didn't eat from that meal. So the Gemara said, why didn't he eat from it? So is it because, now this is what the Gemara says, because when he started the day, he said a superstitious statement. Oh, my! I got the boat, so the whole day will be a wonderful day. So Rav, the Gemara says, was Rav afraid that maybe he said a superstitious thing? And therefore he felt, I can't benefit from the banquet that's going to take place today. Yeah, he said, I regret the fact that I made that statement. The Gemara says, no, that's not the problem. That's not the problem. The problem was because it was a Mesudas Rishus, and he only ate from Mesudas Mitzvah. He was a very holy man. He didn't eat from just any meal, you know, only on Mesudas Mitzvah or whatever. So there was another reason. But you see, the Gemara catches and says that perhaps Rav said a superstitious thing. Oh, I'll have a lucky day today. But the Gemara immediately says, no, Rav didn't do anything wrong. There was nothing wrong with what he did. And then the Gemara gives two other stories. Shmuel, when he wanted to know if he would have a good day, he would open up his Gemara that day. What am I studying? And it was a nice topic, an upbeat subject. Oh, I'll have a good day. Everything's going to go nicely today. And Rav Yochanan, when he used to go and conduct and do business or take care of something, he used to go up to a child or a student in the Beis Medrash, and he'd say, Yankel, what pasuk are you reading now? What pasuk are you doing? So if the pasuk was a nice pasuk, he said, oh, that, it's a good sign for me. And if it was a pasuk dealing with someone dying or something, some war, and if the pasuk wasn't a nice pasuk, then Rabbi Yochanan would say, oh, I'm in trouble. So the Gemara asked the question, Rav, if I get the first bus, you know, if I get on the boat and it's right there waiting for me, I'm going to have a great day. Shmuel says, if I'm learning something nice, I'm going to have a great day. And Rabbi Yochanan said, if the pasuk is portends nice things, I'm going to have a great day. So why are these not called superstitious? And why, you know, we have a halacha, it's Yisur Daraisa, to believe in omens, so to say. That's the question. So I have three general approaches in the Rishonim, and then we'll bring it to a conclusion. One approach is the Radak. The Radak says the following. And the Radak says it in Shmuel Aleph, in the Navi, Perek Yud Dalet. And let me tell you briefly the story over there. Again, we have a very strange situation with, of all people, Yonah's son, the son of Shaul HaMelech. They were at Michmash in the Plishtim, the Philistines were across the way, and they were setting up, apparently, for some type of skirmish. It wasn't clear, the pressure was building. So Yonatan said to his helper, he said, you and I, let's sneak away during the night, and we're going to go towards the enemy camp. See if we could maybe pull off a fast one. So they went through a certain mountain pass, and there were cliffs on top, and it was a very narrow place, but so they stuck their head through. Now, Yonatan says the following. We're going to make sure that they see us. The enemy sees the two of us. If they say, stop, wait, we're going to come to you, stay right there, that means we're in trouble, because that means they're approaching us. But if they say, come here, come forward, we're going to wait right here, come, we see you, come to us right now, that means we're going to defeat them. So Yonatan set up the sign out of the blue. We're going to stand at the mountain pass. If they say, come to us, that means we're going to win. If they say, we're going to come to you, that means we're going to lose and we're in trouble. He set up the sign. And they got to the mountain pass, and the enemy said, we see you, come right now, come to us, forward. So Yonatan said, hey, that's the sign that we're going to win. And that's what happened. The pasuk says in the Navi that they advanced and they miraculously defeated the enemy. They wiped out a large amount of the Plishtim. So the Gemara also, the Urchulin, when it mentions Rav, who says, I'm going to have a great day if I get the boat, and Shmuel, and Rabbi Yochanan, and Eliezer is mentioned in that Gemara. How could it be that he did such a terrible thing, setting up this sign, this superstitious, this omen, and also Yonatan, the son of Shaul. So the Radak says there, it's a lengthy Radak, and he says, it depends how it's set up. If you set it up ahead of time, when you wake up in the morning and you say, if I get the first bus, then I'm going to have a good day. If I go to a student and he gives me a nice pasuk, a nice lesson, I'm going to have a good day. If you said, that's acceptable. But if you're in the middle of doing something, you're proceeding and you're conducting yourself, and all of a sudden there's a black cat crosses, and I have to stop right now, right in the middle of my tracks, I'm not doing that. This is an Isur Daraisa. It's a little bit of a subtle point. If it's set up ahead of time, it's acceptable. I don't know if it's a big mitzvah, but it's acceptable. It's not considered Isur Daraisa. But if a person is in the middle of what they're doing, and they say they break a mirror, I'm in trouble now. Or or if they there's a ladder and they won't go around, they won't go through it, they won't go under the ladder, they walk around it, because even though they're in the middle of what they're doing, that's considered that would be an indication of an omen, which would be an issur d'oraisa, not allowed to rely upon that. And we see in each of the cases we mentioned, either the Amoraim or Eliezer, it was all set up ahead of time before they even started their activity. Now the Ran in Chulin says another approach, and this I think is the easiest one to relate to. The Ran is one of the Rishonim. He says it depends if it's logical or if it's totally illogical. If there's some cause and effect, it's acceptable. But if it's totally arbitrary, then that's Eishah D'oraisa. There's no reason to. So why? Because of a black cat, or because you have to throw salt on each other, whatever it may be, then that's there's no reason to believe that it has an effect upon us. Now, there's a machlokas rishonim, there's a difference of opinion in the commentaries, whether when Eliezer and Yonatan conducted themselves, whether they did something appropriate or inappropriate. It's really, it's a little bit of a subtle point. The reading of the Gemara is not clear, and there are different opinions how to read the Gemara. Those who say that Eliezer and Yonatan acted properly, they would follow, like we said till now, that they set up ahead of time. Or, now, what's the logic between what Eliezer did and what Yonatan? Well, Yonatan, the Radak says nicely like this. He says, we can tell the mentality of our enemy. If they're secure, they'll say, wait there, we're going to come to you. But if they're insecure, they say they want to stay where they are, they're not ready to move. So if they say to approach them, that shows that they're insecure and they're not really capable. So it was a logical sign. We could tell the mindset of our enemy. If they say to approach us, that means they're very aggressive. That means they're very assertive. That means we're in trouble. But if they're laid back and they're afraid and they say, we can approach them, they're setting themselves up and they're not so stable where they are, they don't want to move. So that's an indication that they're actually very weak. So those who want to say Eliezer acted appropriately because it was very reasonable cause and effect. Now Eliezer also, in this week's parasha, we'll come back to this, believe it or not, he said, if I ask for water, she said, I'll give you water and I'll give your camels. That made sense. Why? Because, I'll just briefly point out that, like the Beis HaLevi explains in the parasha, Eliezer said the following, I'm going to give her an opportunity to show me how capable she is. What does that mean? I'm a stranger. I just arrived from Israel. She never saw me before. I'm going to ask this young lady for water. Now, maybe people will say, no, don't give a stranger. I don't even know the culture exactly, but he didn't know what she... But if she says yes, that's wonderful. That's a balas chesed. Give a stranger water who asks for it. That's very nice. But Eliezer said the following. I'm going to only drink a little bit of it. I'm going to drink half of the jug. And I'm going to leave the rest and give it back to her. The Beis HaLevi says this. Now, what is the logic? He says, she can't take it home. Anybody who understands, I may be diseased, I may have spit into it, I may be sick, I'm a stranger. Now, to give me water is very nice, but I gave her back half a pitcher, which I drank from it. She can't take it home. Now, on the other hand, so what's she going to do with it? What's she going to do with it? She'll spill it out, right? She can't spill it out. Why not? That's an insult. It's like someone gives you, here, I drank from this, you want it. Ugh, you know, you spill it out. So she can't take it home because it's not wise. She can't spill it out because that's an insult. It's not nice. So I'm going to give her this dilemma. So I'm going to ask her for water. If she says yes, I'm going to put her in a position where she's got a dilemma. She can't take it home. She can't spill it out. What is she going to do? Now, I know the answer, says Eliezer. The answer is she'll offer to give it to the animals. This way, she doesn't insult me. She shows a nice gesture that she wants to help out. You know, and she's helping my animals too. So if she offers not only to give me, but also to my camels, that's the girl. In other words, this woman is a true balas chesed. So it wasn't just an omen. The Beis HaLevi says it was a calculated strategy. Very interesting. So, according to those who say that Eliezer acted correctly, we understand why. Because it wasn't just an omen, it wasn't just out of the blue. And Yonatan also, we explain why the enemy was, he was detecting their mindset. Now, I've asked around, I've gotten a list of, everyone here probably has a different segula they're familiar with. I mentioned about tefillos at certain places, and red strings, and amulets. What does that mean to us? Now, again, I went online and I looked at some sfarim I have in the house, and every sefer I had on segulos was a sefer with tefillos in it. It didn't say just do this and then you're safe. Every sefer I opened up in my house that some element of segulas was actually a, not a sitter, but it was a sefer, a special tefillos to be said at a time when you're lighting candles, a time for your children. I have a list of about 25 things. Tefillah for parnasa, shalom bayis, for against a person that has the ayin hara against him. Person wants to have a better memory. Forgot that one. Okay. To be about tzliach in business, to be successful. These segulos, not one of them is magic. Every one of them is a tefillah. And with this, I'm going to conclude. We've seen today that a lot of the holidays, even, and the which we see in our society, are pathetic in that their origins are actually either based originally in pagan act or distortions of cruel and unusual religious beliefs that have gotten distorted. We have to be very careful in complying with or adapting ourselves to the culture, because it's something which is not acceptable for a Jewish person. We pointed out that there are certain things that are totally illogical, and done in the middle of what you're doing, you stop because you're afraid of what's going to happen. These things are the yisurim. We pointed out that if something is logical, or it's reasonable, or it's a good sign. Now, this is what I want to. Rav and Rav Yochanan and Shmuel, they were encouraged by what they saw. They didn't rely upon the fact they made the boat. They didn't rely upon the fact the pasuk was a good pasuk, or the student was learning a nice lesson. They would have done what they did anyway. But if a person has a great beginning to the day, then hey, I'm going to have a great day. And that's not magic. That's because a person will carry themselves through. That's what the Gemara means, is mutter. It's a simon, it's a signal that the person will then earn it and live up to it. They'll be encouraged, your attitude will be positive. This is what the Gemara says is perfectly acceptable and even advisable. And certainly, if we use a segula for a tefillah, this is the true approach. Now, this is what the Rambam meant when I said earlier, we're not allowed to be superstitious, and he has in one word there, like the goyim, like the Gentiles. And this is, I think, the key to approaching this segula and superstition. When we go through our day, we're not alone. Shivisi Hashem l'negdi samid. Every activity we do, we know Hashem is with us. We ask for His assistance, and we're encouraged by certain things. We're mispalot to Him for special things. So we go to certain places again, which is encouraging and exciting for us. I think a person goes to Amuka, it's not magic, because now he believes in himself so much, and he feels so good about himself. Sometimes that's the key in order for other people also to buy into you and to latch on to you. That's what a shidduch needs, someone who's encouraged, someone who's upbeat, someone who's positive, someone who will be a good partner. And after going to Amuka, it's not because now it's magic, but now I feel so good about it, I was misfollowed, now I could earn favor in other people's eyes. So the conclusion therefore is that we don't rely on superstition, because we can do better. We are not subject to fate. We don't cast ourselves, well, because it's, well, I can't, therefore I, it's a goner, it's you know, it's useless, I can't do anything anymore, it's just bad luck and I can't help it anymore. This is actually a denial of the whole hashkafa, the whole outlook and the mindset of a Jewish person. So we go together with Klal Yisrael, we have Achdus, we have a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we have our Tfilos, and these would, all the segulas are ways to accompany ourselves together. Like I say, every school I've seen is a Tfilah to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And every superstition is when we break that link, and that's the mindset of a Gentile. We have to be careful about that. So I think the lesson of this week's Parsha and of the upcoming date on the calendar is that we should be very careful to focus our attention on Hashgacha Pratis and the wonderful wonders that Kodesh Baruch Hu does for us and how He accompanies us. A very specific Hashgacha Pratis, meaning that He supervises us every act. And let's carry that that tefillah with us and encouragement and earn favor in everyone's eyes. We could hopefully be zocha with the Achdus to be mekabel Mashiach Tzidkenu b'Mehirah Yameinu.
Amen.
We want to thank the Rebbe for his
for us here today. Before we have a few minutes for questions, if anybody has questions on the topic, just to let everybody know that next week Rabbi Moshe Schechter, also a Rebbe in the Yeshiva, will be giving a shiur next week about lentil soup and the story involved with that. So it should be interesting. And we thank everybody for coming, and hopefully I'll be able to meet everybody pretty soon. And if anybody has any questions for Rabbi Rand, please feel free. Now is the time.